Looking at the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 24, and we were looking at the story, and this is as Isaac is going to get a wife, and Abraham wants to find a wife for his son. But there's always a time when you look at the Old Testament, you look at the promises of God, when you look at the things that have to do with the covenant that God had with Abraham. The covenant that went from Abraham, was given to Abraham. It went from Abraham to his son Isaac, to Jacob, and it was a continual thing. But if you look at the way that the covenant was made with Abraham, there's always a direct tie to the land that they were promised. And so Abraham understood this, and Abraham didn't want his son to ever leave the land of promise. And so when it came time to find a wife for a son, now they were in a land that was far away from all their relatives because they had left and come to this land, which is promised to them. But he didn't want Isaac marrying somebody who was of a different faith, just a different family. He wanted somebody from the history, from the place where Abraham and all of his relatives had lived for generations. And so he wanted not Isaac to go back to the land, but he wanted to send an emissary, somebody who would go on his behalf and find for Isaac the wife that God had for his son Isaac. And so we see in chapter 24 of the book of Genesis that Abraham, who's now well old, took his servant, his eldest servant, his most trusted servant, a man named Eleazar of Damascus. And this was a servant that had confidence and trust of Abraham to the point that everything in the household of Abraham he had access to and he was responsible for. It says that he ruled over all that he had. And he said to him, I beg of you, make this covenant with me. And he asked him to go back to his homeland and to find this wife for Isaac. So this is a servant doing the bidding of his master Abraham. And as we look through chapter 24, there are so many different things to see and so many different angles we can take and so many different truths we can see about the covenant itself from chapter 24. But the angle on the thing that I wanted to look at and have been looking at is the role of this man as the servant, Eleazar. As a servant, how did he live his life? And as a servant, how did he serve his master? Because as we see as how Eleazar served his master, it gives us a really good insight as to how you and I, as servants of Jesus Christ, those who have, as I just said a few moments ago from Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, our lives are living sacrifices. As those who have given our lives, given all that we have, understanding that we're merely stewards over everything that we have, our jobs, our homes, our finances, even our very lives, we are merely stewards over that which we have. Understanding that, as a steward always, what he has responsibility for, he uses it exactly as the master intends and instructs. So we can see from Eleazar how we, as servants of the Lord, those who are in stewardship to him, should live our lives. And as we were going through this, I just wrote down 17 things just in that one chapter that I could see that were examples. And let's just do a quick rundown of the ones we've looked at so far. First of all, we saw that a godly servant is dependable and trustworthy, and we see that in verse number 2 and also in verse number 10. I just told you that Eleazar was the man that was given total responsibility. All that Abraham had, he entrusted. Everything in his household, he entrusted to the care and the stewardship of Eleazar. Second thing that we can see of a godly steward is he was praying and seeking the Lord's guidance. And we can see that as we're going through the story. Let's just read through some of these verses so you get a feel for what's taking place. I'm going to start at verse number 3, or verse number 4. Abraham has already made Eleazar swear to him a covenant, promise him a covenant to find a wife for Isaac, to find it from his homeland, and to make sure that the wife comes here. In other words, he's making sure that Isaac never leaves the land of promise because the covenant is going to be passed from Abraham to Isaac. The covenant as it was in this era, in the Old Testament, and during the reign of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, was a covenant that was for an individual. And so it passed from one individual to another individual. And it was imperative that that individual that had the covenant stayed there in the land that was promised to them. So in verse number 4, but you will go, now this is Abraham speaking to his servant, you will go to the country, to my relatives, and to take a wife for my son Isaac. The servant said to him, "Well, perhaps the woman is not willing to come along with me to this country. Must I take your son to the country which he from which you came?" Abraham said to him, "See to it that you do not take my son back there. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house, from the land of my family, of my birth, who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, 'To your offering I will give this land,' he will send his angel before you, and he will take a wife there for my son." So he's saying, listen, this is the land of promise, and I'm not going to have my son leave the land of promise. So you've got to bring that wife back here. She must come here. And God's going to send the angel before you. God will work it out. All you have to do is go and be faithful. Verse 8, "And if the woman should not be willing to go along with you, then you'll be clear of this oath. Only you must not take my son back there." So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, which is the way of making a covenant, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. And the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed, taking some of all his master's treasures with him. Thus he journeyed to Mesopotamia, between the Tigris and the Euphrates, to the city of Nahor. This is where Abraham's brother was. And he made his camels to kneel down at the city by a well of water at the time of the evening, when the women came to draw water. And he said, O Lord my God, of my master Abraham, I pray you cause me to meet with good success today and show kindness to my master Abraham. See, I stand here by the well of the water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming to draw water. And let it be so that the girl whom I say, I pray you, let down your jar that I may drink. And she replies, drink, and I will give your camels drink also. Let her be the one to whom you've selected and appointed and indicated for your servant Isaac to be a wife to him. And by it I shall know that you have shown kindness and faithfulness to my master." And then it goes on that even as he spoke, that's exactly what Rebekah comes. He spoke those words to Rebekah. Rebekah said, gave him the water, but also replied, "Let me get water for your camels as well." The story goes on that as he meets Rebekah's family, which is actually the brother. Rebekah's father is the brother of Abraham. As he meets the family, including the father and the brother, he makes the preparations, and Rebekah agrees to come back to the promised land with the servant Eliezer to be the wife of Isaac. So that's what's taking place. So the comments or the qualities that we've seen so far are to be a servant of God, to be a godly servant, which this servant was, and which you and I should strive to be. A, we have to be dependable and trustworthy. B, we got to be prayerful, seeking the Lord for guidance, and we saw that Eliezer was doing that. The third thing we saw was priorities. Don't think of yourself until the business is done, and we saw that through multiple verses. I won't go back there again. The fourth thing we saw was never speak. Eliezer never spoke his name, but always his master's. He was always Abraham's servant. In other words, he was not thinking of himself, but he thought of his master first and foremost. Boy, that's a key point for us as godly servants. Most of the time in our lives, we always say, I. We talk about ourselves. Instead, my life should be the same way that this servant Eliezer thought about himself in relation to his master. He always spoke of himself as his master's servant. This is the way we should think of ourselves, and this is the way that we should speak. But our words betray our hearts, and our hearts are that we care more about what we want and our desires than we do about what God wants and what God desires. To be a godly servant, we have to have that same heart that sees ourselves always as the master's servant. The fifth thing we saw was he talks about the master. He talks to the master, not himself. Again, this is that same attitude of focused on the things of God is how we should be. Focused on the master. That's what Eliezer was. This is what we need to be. Focused on the master. Focused on God. Talking about God. Thinking about God. Not talking about ourselves. The sixth thing we saw was he gives God glory. Throughout, we do see Eliezer always giving God the glory in all things. The seventh thing we saw was he finds joy in faithfulness and godly results. In other words, he was a praiser. As servants of God, godly servants, we need to be praising and thanking him. The eighth thing that we saw was he was faithfulness, was rewarded with stewardship over all things. The ninth thing we saw was he trusts the Lord when he goes in obedience. We should be obedient. We should be obedient to the things of God. The things that God has told you and I to do, a lot of times we don't do it because it doesn't make sense in the natural. It's not logical, and so we don't do it. But it's when we're obedient, that's when we see that he's going to trust us with more. The tenth thing was trust the Lord. It's going to go before him with the unseen work. And I think this is where we actually left off. So trust the Lord for the unseen things and know that the Lord's going to go before you. In the same way that when Abraham said to the servant, listen, I'm going to send you into that country to find a wife for my son Isaac. And he said to him, look, the angel of the Lord's going to go before you and prepare the way. I know you're traveling a long, long distance. You don't know anybody there. You don't know how you're going to find that wife. All you have to do is go. You be obedient and you go, and the angel of the Lord's going to work out all the details. And that's exactly what happened. And this is an example of how you and I should live our lives as godly servants to our master, to Jesus Christ. If he says go, we should just simply go and not worry about how it's going to work out or what's going to happen when we get there. We just go in obedience and watch that God's already taken care of all things. I remember the story that I had read about, I always forget his first name, I think it's John G. Lake, man of God, last name is Lake, and he would have lived around the turn of the century in the early 1900s. And God told him to go to Africa, and this would have been turn of the century and a little bit later. And God told him to go to Africa, and you know the story was, and he did amazing things when he was in Africa, served with people who had the plague. Never got the plague himself, even though he was not vaccinated. Just amazing stories. But as he was told to go, God told him to go to Africa. He had no resources, but he knew God said go. So he went down to the docks, got in line, found a ship that was going to whatever country you're supposed to go to, got in line with all these other people that were either buying tickets or already had tickets. And he's getting closer and closer to where he's either got to purchase a ticket or show his ticket. And he's got nothing. But he'd start up a conversation with the man that was in front of him. And as the man in front of him had learned why John G. Lake was going to Africa and what his desires were, he got up there and this man said, you know what, I'm going to pay for your ticket. And so he paid for his passage from America to Africa. And then Lake did all the amazing things that he did there. I mean, Jesus did amazing things through him in his life. But he had to be obedient. He didn't know how it was going to turn out. He just knew that God said go, so he went. He prepared. You and I would usually, if God said go, what we would tend to do, well, not tend to do, it's what we would do. We would sit at our homes and wait for God to bring the finances or to bring the ticket to us or to make the provision so we could have the ticket. And we wouldn't go until we had the ticket in our hand. But you see, that's not what faith is. Faith is you move in obedience. When God says move, you move. And even though you can't see how it's going to work out, you go put yourself in line, and you start moving as that line moves forward. And by the time you get to the place where you have to have a ticket, God will make provision for you. This is the obedience and the trust that we see from this servant, Eleazar. And it's the example to you and I of what we need to be as servants of God. We need to also operate in that kind of trust in all things. Also, God causes Rebecca to speak the words. You know, we just saw that from the story, as Eleazar said, God, I don't know how this is going to work out, so here's what I'm going to do. Whatever woman comes to the well, you bring the right woman. I'm going to ask this question, and you ever give this response. And so God already prepared the heart of Rebecca. Already prepared the heart of Rebecca to have the response she had to have, and have the heart to want to come back and marry someone who was to leave her family and her home, go to a strange land, to marry someone that she doesn't even know. But she did it in obedience herself. Here's the 11th point. Be bold in obedience. Now, we can see this in several places. Chapter 4, or verse number 14 says, well, we just saw that. That's where this is the boldness of Eleazar, the servant of God. He said, look, God, I don't know how to make this happen. So I'm here at the well. I'm going to wait for a girl. When I see a woman, I'm going to come up to her. I'm going to say this. When I say this, let this be her reply. That's boldness. You know, it took some boldness for Eleazar to go up and to approach this woman and to say this. And then to wait for the response. It took boldness to go up and say, hey, look, I know you're drawing water for yourself and your responsibilities, but lower your bucket and draw some water for me first. Okay, that takes some boldness. And it took boldness to even share what he was there for, you know, once she gave the appropriate response. We also see in verses 17 through 20. Let's read through those. And the servant ran to meet her, and he said, I pray you, let me drink with a little water. Well, that's the story that we can just see. And she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran again to the well and drew water for his camels. So he's getting the response of the boldness of his actions there. And in verse number 23, and he said, whose daughter are you, I pray? Tell me, is there room in your father's house to lodge me there? So again, we see that boldness in obedience, that boldness of the servant of God. He even said to Rebecca, once you found out, okay, this is the woman, she answered, now I'm going to invite myself to stay at her house. Is there room at your house? Will they let me stay there? When you know that God has told you to do something in obedience, we have to be bold. Boldness is a sign of a godly servant. Here's the 12th point. God provides for all when we go and move in faith. He provides for everything when we go and move in faith. When we have that boldness, He provides everything. Let's read, we're going to skip ahead to verses 31 through 33. Now, these are the verses that talk about when he was actually at the household. He invited himself, and now he's at the household. He's met the brother. He's met the father. He's staying with the family. He cried, "Come on in, you blessed of the Lord." So now this is the family inviting him in. "Why do you stand outside? I've made the house ready, and have prepared a place for your camels." So the man came into the house, and Laban ungirded his camels, gave straw and provender to the camels, and water to bathe his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. And a meal was set before him, and he said, "I will not eat until I have told my errand." And Laban said, "Speak on." So he told the family members about his errand. Basically, he's saying, "Look, I came to get your daughter and take your daughter away from you. Take her to a place she's never been to before, to marry a man she knows nothing of, but who is a relative of this family." God provides for all we need when we move in faith. You see, this man, Eleazar, had no idea where he was going to stay, who would take care of his camels. He had no provision for any of those things. But when he moved in obedience and in faithfulness and in boldness, we see that, you know, here the response of the family is, "Well, come in. You blessed the Lord." The family saw Eleazar and said, "Come in. We've got you taken care of. Look, we'll provide food for your camels, water for your camels, water for yourself. Here, here's some water to wash your feet. And come on in. We've prepared a meal for you as well. Don't worry about finding your own food. We've got it taken care of for you." This is what God does as servants of God when we're obedient and trust and respond in faith. These are the particulars. These are the characteristics, the qualities of the godly servant. We'll come back tomorrow and we'll look at the final characteristics that we see. But we can learn so much from Eleazar on how to be a godly servant in our lives, how we serve our Master, Jesus Christ. The qualities and the attitudes that we need to have to find the faithfulness. Jesus is always faithful, but to find how we can lay hold of that faithfulness and procure it for ourselves and bring it into our lives, it comes from having the same kind of responses, the same kind of qualities, the same kind of attitudes of Eleazar, the servant of Abraham. That's Genesis chapter 24. Read through yourself. It's a quick read through the chapter, and you'll pick up some qualities of your own that I haven't even looked at yet.